welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And this is the type of show you never want to do.
Indeed.
So, you don't, you know, as fans, as spectators, you have a different relationship to friends and family, but, you know, I feel like you can't help, you know, when you watch somebody over a long period of time, you can't help but find out things about them. And I gotta say, from the first shutdown, one of the things I found out about watching old Richmond games was just how much fun it was watching Shane Tuck play football, which makes this a terribly sad show to have to do.
Yeah, one of the first things we debated on this podcast, which started, I think 2012, was the...
I think it was 2011.
Either way, it was sort of the Shane Tuck's future in the team, and I could never think about it rationally because I just loved watching him play so much, so hard and so well. Like, he was one of my favourites. I can't say anything more articulate than the many people who on various Richmond forums have, said how much they liked him because he gave his all for the club, which he really did. Look, I've told it before. It's on the podcast, I think, probably twice, but I saw him play in the VFL once when Dimmer had exiled him to Coburg at the time. And he was playing in a practice match in Frankston, I believe. He was obviously annoyed about being dropped, and he was sort of, his defensive running probably wasn't the best that day, but he threw himself basically in front of a track when there was a Frankston player running the other direction. He dove at a ball and picked it up in a way that you had to take a huge amount of contact to win a contested possession. I just thought, you know, this man is just, he's just so brave, and he plays like we'd imagine we'd play if we wore the Richmond jumper, but he played like that when he was playing a VFL practice game when we had already played 100 games of AFL football and was in many ways an established a star, you know, starting midfielder in the AFL is a star. So, an amazing character, very much a man after your own heart, and he's goal-kicking, Nick.
Yes, it was good at goal-kicking. I think it's worth reflecting about how unlikely his career was. Like, he, you know, of course he had the famous surname, but one of the things I was thinking about was that Richmond recruiters of the late 90s and early 2000s was, you know, they must have been into racehorses because they liked fringe players with famous surnames. So, you know, we drafted Keith Gregg's son, Matthew. Royce Hart's son, Simon, was a rookie. We had Adam Pickering as the forgotten third Pickering brother. And then in 2003, with a late pick, we drafted Shane Tuck in a draft class that included Andrew Raines and Tom Roach. Mm.
But even a seventh-round draft pick.
Yeah. Well, and even there, 2 years before that, he'd been playing as a 21-year-old in the Mornington Peninsula League. Like, I'm pretty certain he was the only player from that whole league who went on to play AFL football. And, you know, then went to West Adelaide, which we know is as... is a long way from the MCG as a glamorous football.
Well, there is a tacky crossover location. The reason we went there is I had an amateur boxing bout, and that was also Tucky's. He boxed about when he was about the same age I did, but against far more high quality opponents, I might add.
Yeah, so he's playing on the Mornington Peninsula at 21. At age 23, he's been drafted, and he's a fringe player for the worst team in the competition. Like, the gap between there and seven times in the top 10 best and fairest, life member at the Richmond Football Club, guess how many of the current Richmond team, you know, chock-a-block with premiership players, have a better career high for disposals than Shane Tuck?
Well, I'm going to cheat slightly. So his career disposal rate is 23.4.
So he peaks at 28.
I'd be willing to say none.
It's one. Dusty's got one at 31 and another at 29, and that's it.
Oh, sorry, so not career average, but just season average.
Season high.
Season high, right, yeah. Okay, yes. Mm. So basically it was a different type style of football, but yeah, got a lot of it.
He was a ball-winning warrior, you know, for a long time with a bad team. And we only won 40% of the games he played in. His last game was his first final. And even then, you'd say he went out on his shield. And he had the second most clearances on the team that day. Like, yeah, he got everything out of his career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a bit painful. His last game was his Carlton final, but I guess you can say that about every one of our heroes who didn't play in 2017.
At least he got to play in a final, even as disappointing as it was.
And look, he got to play in a winning team. The last 2 years of that team were winning and now playing in front of big crowds. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like playing for the old Brisbane Bears or, you know, some of these guys who, you know, played for, could get 15 games for the Suns, so their AFL career is as far off Broadway as can possibly get.
Mm. I have a theory for you.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of one of the debating points, I think of this podcast when we first started, but there was a notable Gary Lyon article unfavourably comparing Richmond's rebuild to Melbourne, and Melbourne in the late zeros, you know, went full tank. They did, stripped everything back, and went with loads of high draft picks, whereas we, you know, we kept a core of the club rather than absolutely trade everyone. And I think guys like Shane Tuck helped to sustain the culture of the place when, you know, through coaching upheavals. And unlike Melbourne, you know, Tom Scully, you know, albeit for loads of money, you know, leaves after a couple of years. Like, all those premiership players when they were young, you know, establishing themselves, bright future in the game, none of those left, you know, which we've seen at other clubs. And I think players like Shane Tuck help to sustain the culture that helps those guys stick around.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, people like to talk about these things in absolute terms. It works when it works, right? And in Richmond's case, you know, Melbourne picked a few bad coaches. They burnt out a few that got injury problems with some of their best players. But, you know, there is something to be said for the guys like Shane Tuck were taking the hits and playing decent footy, so Kotcher didn't have to, you know.
You see Adelaide more recently, you know, players, good players leaving all the time. Like, I think culture's not everything, but it is something.
Yeah, so Shane Tuck would have played over 50 games with Dusty, for instance.
Mm.
He played, played about 60, yeah. He yep. played 63 games after we drafted Dusty, and Dusty was, you know, he didn't play every game his rookie year, but, you know, he basically... You're talking about probably minimum 50 games together, so that's a lot of That's a lot of, you know, Dusty was already, was recognised pretty early on as the next big thing, but Shane was there sucking up the midfield, doing the hard yards, and yeah, there's a real bridge argument there, and he faded out at pretty much just as the team got good. He only played 11 games in 2013, but yeah, he had kept the team alive, kept it respectable, and it so happened we... I mean, do we all pat ourselves on the back? No one knew at the time that we were going to get incredibly good at drafting late draft picks in the rookie, and that's how we built the team in the end. Shane Tuck was part of the team that won enough games that meant we were drafting a bit later that meant we got Vossi and Brando, so I don't know. There's swings and roundabouts. Nick, I'd just like to say my favourite thing that you've ever said on this podcast was once when you described when Shane Tuck came on as a sub, that, oh my God, that's Shane Tuck music, which was exactly how I felt at the time when Shane Tuck came on the field. Like, it was a double fist pump, because it was towards the end, and he was so much fun to watch, and just lovable. It's a sad day for Tiger fans, but... as a four, he certainly, as you say, he got every single game, every single possession, every single contested ball out of his career.
Seems like an anticlimax to talk about North Melbourne after that.
I did want to say this before the Shane Tuck thing. I wanted to say how much I enjoyed watching it. Like, it meant a lot to me to be able to watch that. I'm in Melbourne, I'm locked down, and it's a great relief. And, you know, I'm not making any more of this point than it is, but just when you see statistics about, we're all looking health statistics at the moment, over 1,000 people die a year of suicide in Australia, and that's probably an understatement, and the average age is 44. The importance of mental health and football being on to give people release, I know it's a lot about keeping the economics of the game afloat, but shouldn't be understated. So, great to watch. It's a hard mood change, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I was worried. You know, North had an awful lot of injuries. Like, let's not understate this, but so did we. And like, it felt like two VFL teams playing each other, and for us to destroy them, like we're still the premiership team. You know, just because we're wearing the same jumpers, all the personnel changed, and there's no game. Laundry does not kick goals. I genuinely thought that game was a masterclass of coaching.
Yeah, it was. The North Melbourne kangaroo talk would be a difficult podcast to do this week. It was at one stage 20-2 in inside 50s. They didn't look like scoring in the first quarter.
They had one inside 50 in the entire quarter. That's pretty tough to score from.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Noah Boulder played quite well, but it was hard to tell. For several North Melbourne forwards, I had, Mason Wood. I'd forgotten he was playing. that happened a couple of times. It was a fun game. Our midfield was right on top. Our defence was fantastic. Small forwards back in form, even if the key forwards not quite there yet. And cameo, right? Then it was a lot more enjoyable game to watch.
Yeah. It was a one-sided game, but obviously.
Yeah, as I said, very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, but like, it's just such a tribute that, and I don't mean to pick on various people on Twitter, but someone said, we just have so much talent in the VFL. Well, they might be really talented, but no one else, there's an awful lot of guys who are playing absolutely key roles that no one else in the AFL when they were young. You know, these weren't stars when they were young. They were guys that people saw play footy and decided they weren't very good. You know, Derek Eglemazie-Smith, no one was you know, I don't remember the media article saying, "Gee, we got a bargain there." All right. Nor, by the way, in the VFL, no one was arguing that he should be playing more AFL games. Like, you know, he had that one or two decent foot games when he got picked up to the seniors, but he hasn't been averaging 23 disposals in VFL games prior to this year. Hasn't been taking speckies.
No, he was feeling himself with that one. He's improved a lot, to say the least. Like, as a 17-year-old, he was a flanker averaging 10 disposals a game for the Murray Bush Rangers. Like, yeah. And then as a 19-year-old, played a bit as a top-up player for our VFL team and got drafted from there, so... Yeah, he's come from a fair way back, and look, part of it was, you know, we had a lot of targets for him to kick to, but yeah, he was certainly orchestrating the show back there.
Yeah, and look, good. Like, obviously, he was playing the Hawley role, as Dimmer explained, and he stepped up and played, you know, I didn't. It, very competently, I would say, overall. Like, take away the contest mark, it was just a very solid game. It's a game, it's a role that you're going to get a lot of possessions because, you know, we were just so utterly dominant. Vossi again had 11 intercepts. Grimes was sweeping up everything. As you say, Bolton was competent. You know, it was a good back line to play in the game. That's sort of the one thing is the Grimes-Vossi combination is the thing. Grimes-Vossi broad is sort of the, I guess short, meaning he didn't play 17, but that's sort of the core of the team that's still intact. And, yeah, just playing brilliantly. Short was the only other player to get above 20 possessions, the 600 metres gained. The back line has just been impenetrable. And Bolton had 8 touches. I know we've sort of said this before. He really is the Shane Edwards, the new Shane Edwards, and that his creativity just means he can take a game apart. He just doesn't do it for long enough, but you keep looking at the sort of the 20 minutes of brilliance and go, just say, well, he's already, you know, he had 10 contested possessions. I don't want to say he didn't have a good game, but you also, and 5 clearances, but you also led the team. You also wonder, wow, he could just be anything. Just got a bit more. Dimmer said after the game that he really thinks the Bolton's midfielder, and one of the advantages of the injuries is they get to play him there more.
Yeah, look, maybe a future role is him sort of swapping forward, you know, stints on ball and then at half forward. But yeah, as you say, it was a pretty impressive effort.
Actually tackling quite physically hard. Which is hashtag things that get you picked on the Richmond team.
I thought the whole team bought defensive pressure. Like, we were talking about the back line, like Liam Baker hitting the contest hard, and there was a lot to like.
Speaking of which, Graham is has gone almost exactly back to sort of the best of his 2019 and 18 form. 15 touches, you know, fine. Many meters gained, a few contested possessions, but sort of twice as many pressure acts almost as anyone else on the ground. He had 84, which sort of the best player on the ground most of the time in this year's footy is getting about 50, and so he had 84. So it's the equivalent of a modern footy equivalent of a 7-goal game in pressure act terms. Not quite as spectacular. I swear sometimes he runs over the ball to get a pressure act because the other team picks it up. But it's not all good. But what that statistic is telling you about is his presence around the ball, his work rate, and his relentless desire to make life miserable for the other team's midfielders.
Well, speaking of which, if you look, I've got quite fond of the Telstra tracker on the AFL app, and you know, it tracks how hard people work both in attack and defence. And the five players who worked hardest tracking back in defence were all Richmond players, headed up by Marlon Pickett and Camden McIntosh, who also rate very highly in repeat sprint stats as well. Like, it was a really, like, it was a team that had a nice mix of attack at the ball, but just all over defence and working really hard, and every disposal North Melbourne had was under pressure. It was a satisfying effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, just our system crushed them. Now, they tried to do something. They tried to pick us apart a bit, a short kick, which wasn't how they were playing earlier in the year. They sort of came up with it. They tried to sort of American football, where they had a completely different game plan for Richmond. And, well, you know, it turns out they don't have side bottom draw and Adams in their midfield, and it's not as easy to do that.
No, and, you know, it had Sean Higgins at halfback racking up disposals, but, I don't know, shoulder shrug emoji. Didn't feel like it meant very much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, huge game if old-fashioned disposal metrics for your best midfielder is your best possession winner is your bag, but doesn't seem to be that useful to win games. So I did sort of, well, it's kind of, I don't know at the right point to bring in the rucks, which is there ever a wrong
time? Any it's always the right time. Well, If we're going to talk about the rucks, do we have to talk about why Jason Castagna needs to buy Ivan Soldo dinner for missing the goal assist from that perfect foot pass to him?
Yeah, good point. But, yeah.
Soldinho!
Goldie was pretty dominant early on, but in the end, actually, the hitouts to advantage were only 4-9, and the overall hitouts were 24-28. There was definitely a time I thought where Goldie was in. There was one right contest where I thought Soldo, you could tell he'd run out of ideas, and he just sort of gave up. And I recognised the body language, but then he. Goldie did something really good on the next. It was the next contest. I believe Soldinho had the that awful mark taken against him in the forward 50, and he came out really fired up after that. I think he might have got a rocket from the coach because wasn't good enough that a ruckman got a contested mark taken on him right in the prime position like that. Was at the end of the second quarter a few.
Josh Walker's.
But other than that, look, he was respectable, which was sort of the interesting one. Doing a lot of skillful round the ground work, still get bodied in the rucks, but
gets bodied a bit in the rucks. What I was really impressed by was how much, like, his thinking through sort of one or two, even three phases of play from a ruck contest where the ball hits the ground and he chases after it and tackles and sometimes even lays another tackle. Like, he's a big athletic boy, so if he can make an impact at the contest, it really makes a difference, I think.
Yeah, he's one. He's another guy who's, I mean, we remember so much his contributions, but he had 9 touches for the day. And, if he asked you what was good about his game, you'd say, well, he's around the groundwork. Obviously, 2 goals is great. Admittedly, his first goal was against the first gamer, but not a 18-year-old first gamer, a first gamer whose twin brother is playing quite well in the AFL. So he's sort of, he's just a bit inconsistent. And occasionally, he still does one or two things a game where, you could have done that, tacked that ball slightly harder, which is not good for Ruck, but
Ben McKay was in his fifth game.
Oh, apologies. I thought it was his first game. His first game for the year? Might have been his first game
for first the year. First game for the year. I apologize. Yeah, he's 22. He's almost the same age.
and Chole made him look terrible. That first mark, he looked like a guy like like he looked like a VFL hack.
Rather, unlike, well, he was a first round draft pick in the same draft that Chole was rookie pick.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, Chole is still remains a bit of an enigma and slightly frustrating, but we're basically paying him glorified rookie list wages. He still is on the rookie list. This is the thing.
He's really useful.
He's really useful, and he's giving very good for value for money. Like, you have to pay usually a lot more than what we're paying to get the output we're getting right at this moment from him.
Yeah. Like, he has more games like that. You know, he's not that far from Ty Vickery. Without having to spend a top-10 draft pick.
He keeps doing that. He keeps, like, kicking one or two goals. People are going to start game-planning for him. So it's definitely exciting. Mm. I guess the thing with him is you always sort of think there could be more. He does enough that you think, geez, like, imagine if he got up to 15 possessions a game as a second round forward. Got a bit more of the ball when he was forward. Because he just got so much skill. Like, he is one of those rucks who's another mid when the ball's on the ground. Anyway, exciting. He's playing well in front of his family too.
Yeah, he's enjoying being up in Queensland. I'm happy to report that Jake Arntz's goal kicking is not representative of his lengthy VFL career to date. He's not an exceptional shot for goal, but he is thankfully better than what he showed.
Yeah, you could tell a Cunha that it was in his head. He kicked it as soon as he didn't have to think about it. I was feeling for him towards the end, and I was so glad he got, well, he wound up getting two. I must admit, I wouldn't be betting anything on him to kick his next set shot, but I'm trying to reverse more there. We'll see how it goes.
He's fine. He's completely average.
He's fine if he goes back to kicking how he does normally. But, you know, all players have hot and cold streaks. It's probably not entirely random when they go hot and cold.
Well, players go in and out of being in form. But, yeah, there's certainly some nerves. Some nerves there. But I love a first goal. Speaking of small forwards, I thought Dan Rioli was definitely more like himself.
Glad you brought him up. He actually killed it for pressure points. Someone who was at the game tweeted that, I'm sorry, I think it might have been Dylan Lynch.
Dylan Lynch was, yeah.
Said that his off-ball running was great. Actually, the stats...
Should we be calling them Riolis? Whether a guy's coming off half-back and thinks he's in the clear and Dan runs him down from 30 metres to put pressure on.
This was actually one of the first game of the year where we had a lot of guys who were above their usual level of pressure rates, and he was way above. He was the second best player on the ground, which small forwards often never are. I still think, very impressive from that perspective. I still think he's kicked a goal, of course. Very classical small forwards goal, but was unbelievable lack of pressure by North Melbourne. I still do think there were two moments where it was a contested marking moment, and there's another moment in a contest where I thought Pete Dan Rioli gets that ball. He does something special. He has that extra burst, and he's just like, I just do not believe he's 100% just watching him.
No, but it certainly felt a lot closer.
True, and he was doing an awful lot of the off-ball work. Now, Nick, I'd just like to mention, I know we talked about him before, but on the AFL rankings, Bolton was the best player on the ground, but on the champion data rankings, Dylan Grimes was actually the best attacking player on the ground. Really? 19 disposals. Quite a lot of pressure acts by him, 6 intercepts.
Yeah, the coaches' votes aren't out yet, but yeah, I'll be interested to see who gets them.
I think that's probably the first time in his career he's been there. Best player on ground.
Maybe the Port Adelaide game last year. But yeah, he looked there. We mentioned the whole back line was great. I thought, yeah, that, and yet, you know, we've dominated the game. I thought Lynch clearly is still hampered by the hand. Jack struggled to be consistently involved. Dusty's only just going. Although, to be said, I saw something this morning of on AFL ratings. They had, you know, the top 25 players in the AFL over the last three rounds. And actually, could you guess which three Richmond players are in there?
Repeat the question.
So, AFL ratings.
Yep.
Top 25 players in the AFL over the last 3 weeks, and there's three Richmond players.
Bolton?
No. Yeah, one of them had a milestone game 2 weeks ago.
Oh God, this is Lambert.
Yep. Lambert ranks top 10. Jack Higgins comes in at 14th, and Dusty 21st. So even impaired cruise control, Dusty still one of the best in the competition.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not that there's no way you're not you are trying to, but the straw man argument that Dusty, that was a return to form for Dusty. Both his goals came when North Melbourne panicked and gave away dumb free kicks, where he was in a semi dangerous position, but probably wasn't about to score a goal. Dimon talked about him afterwards, that he's doing a lot of, because a lot of people are going to him at the contest, he's freeing up other people, that, you know, if there's two people go to Dusty, then create space for someone else. And you know, that's good to hear, and he obviously didn't like the off-ball work that Dusty's getting. So he's not fully fit, but again, he contributes, and, you know, he kicked two goals to his form. Both his goals were when the... No, his first goal was the second goal of the game. The game was already over by the time the second goal. But yeah, it was the first goal, especially, was important, and it at least it worried North enough to give away that you must have loved the umpire correctly interpreting a fairly obscure.
And I know, like, well, it's, you know, having been in one of the briefing sessions for it, you would show that video. That incident, that is exactly what Taggers were doing consistently, is holding on to gun players to stop them making the next contest. And they brought that rule in to stop that situation. So, yeah, that caused me some frustration.
Oh, well, no, I mean, Hodge called it. He explained it. I'm not completely convinced on Hodge as a commentator, but I thought that was actually good that he explained clearly what it was, and so it was sweet, sweet times for umpiring fans, Nick. But I just on Lynch just quickly, he's very, very clearly not fit, but he's contributing, and my God, he's a monster at contests. Like, I know that poor North Melbourne player who got knocked out, you know, it wasn't Lynch's fault, but that doesn't happen if Lynch isn't a huge-bodied man who hits pack really hard. Now, he got knocked by his opponent, and that's why it happened, so it wasn't his fault. But, like, that's also partly a function of just being a very large, strong man who he does, even when he doesn't mean to, hit very hard.
Anyone else?
No, I mean... Kamak was a bit down on possessions, but I think he was to keep his spot. Yes, North had a lot of injuries, but we lost Caddy too, and that's a huge loss for us, particularly because, you know, he's one of our... playing a running wing role.
I was interested that Castagna moved into that role at times.
Yeah,
we'll see more of that.
Yeah, but you saw him popping up at half-back, didn't you? Didn't you, sort of sweeping?
Yeah.
Which was how he started his career, that people might recall, so... I don't hate it. It probably isn't playing out.
No, but you do have the odd heart and mouth moment when George is disposing of the ball at halfback.
But you know, it's duct tape and chewing gum holding the team together at the moment. And look, I don't know what's going to happen against the Giants. We'll talk about that in a second. But look, I don't there's so many upsets in the AFL going on. The form's really weird. But who would have thought a round one game win against Carlton is probably going to be a very good win by the, you know, Melbourne a few weeks ago put in the most insipid display of football I've seen in a long time, and now the
look quite respectable. I think both in Melbourne, if we'd lost to either Melbourne or Carlton, they'd both be in the top eight. So
I think it's just a matter of. You bank wins, you try to make the top eight and hope that our good players are fit. That's what we should be thinking of in the season. And from that perspective, it was a really great win against two very winded teams. And they never got a chance to get close. So, look, I loved watching it. So, a lot of fun.
Just to mention it quickly, the AFL announced... the draft order for the AFLW draft, although, you know, there's no, like the TSC Cup, the boys competition, there's no junior competition this year for picking players from. As, you know, example number 17,000 of why 2020 is a mess, but so we've got the first pick in the draft, and they gave us an extra first-round draft pick, which we have to trade for an established player, which is actually out of the rule book. For when they set up the Giants, they gave the Giants extra picks, which they were encouraged but not made to trade for established players, and the Giants just use it to bank more high picks. Which is a perfect transition to the team of millionaires that we're playing this week.
Before we get onto it, it is just and, so...
A Giants team heading for their, I think it's their sixth game of the season at Giants Stadium.
Yeah. It is also, look, just so around the AFLW thing, it is so weird that... After six games, team that they're giving compensatory picks, you know, why didn't you just give that? And, you know, one expansion club didn't get them, and we did. Two did.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like you went to all expansion. It's just so weird after six games to be giving out.
If it's one thing we know, the AFL loves micromanaging. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, they're probably actually not. It's probably fairly. Yeah. It's just. It feels like just something to keep bored people. Like this pointless tinkering. Like because you know, let's as you say, because there's no junior competition. High draft picks are probably less valuable because there's less information known about the people you're picking. So yeah, whatever. But you know, hopefully you might find a club that falls in love with its a prospect that will give you a semi-decent. Player something in return, but I doubt whether it really matters. Yes, GWS, incredibly privileged. Just like I know I talk about this every time we play them. Just
so do I.
Well, you talk about how privileged they are, and I talk about I just can't believe how crap they are considering the talent. Like it astounds me every year that they're just not winning flag easily when you sort of look at the talent they have in their VFL team. When they bring in some obscure guy and it turns out that like he was he would have been a top 10 draft pick if they hadn't somehow fandangled him into the team. Like it's just extraordinary to me that not better. Actually, Leeds had a really good article about this that he made the point that because they're all so talented, you know, they're all basically Leeds, you know, super talented, best player on their junior team, and that they when they get in the hole, they just think that they can, because they've spent their whole life being the best player on the ground, that they can just, you know, flick that switch and they'll all win. And occasionally it does work. It certainly worked against us.
Well, they made the grand final last year, and God, they stitched us up pretty regularly at their home ground.
The thing is that they made the grand final because they got extremely lucky in a game they would have lost 9 times out of 10 against Collingwood. Now, they had a ton of injuries, but... you know, the idea that Liam, like, you know, I frankly think Liam Cameron is probably the most sackable coach in the AFL. I hate to say that, ex-Richmond player, but...
Yeah. I don't know. The whole, you know, they certainly have built more culture than they used to have. But yeah, and they're so 14 first round draft picks in the team, and that's not counting Jeremy Cameron, who possibly would have been the first pick in the draft had he got to the draft. You know, they've got one of the players in their team drafted by the Giants. They've got one who wasn't drafted in the first two rounds. Like, it's just, it's a team full of millionaires, and it's amazing. You know, they lost to North Melbourne by 20 points not that long ago. North with fewer injuries, but still, like, yeah, as you're saying, they should be better than they are for the ludicrous amount of talent they have.
Nick, can I just go down the last week's Richmond team? I'm just going to read down by where they are drafted in order of their champion data rating. Preseason draft, Cat B rookie pick, mid-season draft, second round draft pick, first round, late first round draft pick, high first round draft pick, third round pick, rookie, mature age rookie pick, rookie pick, very late draft pick, rookie pick, rookie pick, first round pick, special rookie category, whatever Soldo was,
category B rookie, yeah.
Mature age rookie, late second rounder, late second rounder, free agent signing Tom Lynch and Caddy trade. So.
Mm.
I mean, just the amount of times I said first round draft pick was very low in that little
compared to the Giants. Yeah, the Giants had no one in their team that they drafted as a rookie. I'm pretty certain you listed off 9 guys who were rookie picks for us. Like, they, you know. Is it too much to say that if the Giants had more Shane Tucks in the team, we'd all be in trouble?
No, I think that's a very nice way to put it.
But we're quite possibly going to lose to them this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I before the North game, I thought there's no way we're going to beat the Giants with this team. And which is why the North game is incredibly important to the season, because we need to just bank the wins. And they've got injuries too, and obviously their form's atrocious. Mm. But it's their deck. We don't play their deck very well. I have zero confidence going into this game, but I think they've won, to the credit of the team, they've won enough games that they've put themselves in a position where it doesn't, you know, the game is important but not vital.
Yeah, and look, the betting line says that we're underdogs, but not without a puncher's chance. We're going to have to play our best, but it's hard not to be impressed by the character they've shown just in getting to this point. And yeah, there's hopefully some reinforcements on the way soon. Apparently the fixture's about to get crazy with the number of games, you know, compressing the schedule. So look, who knows, but it's hard not to feel good about where the club is right now.
I just don't think it can be understated, you know, how it, you know, I can eye roll about, you know, whatever phraseology they're using at the moment to describe, you know, every premiership team thinks that they're special, that their culture's better than everyone, and they'll keep winning forever. Like, you could have Geelong thought the same way, Brisbane thought the same way, they all thought the same way, and it all ends when the good players get old. And that's just the rule, the universal rule of football. So the fact that we can be competitive with this this team is just like, it's so impressive. It's fun to watch, and I'm really enjoying it. And we should really appreciate it. Mm. I think this is brilliant coaching, and I think this team is really maximising its talent, which is all you can really ask for from a football team that you support.
Mm. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
Just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from that way.
Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Something fantastic, and we just got to keep riding away.
Martin, three votes.